Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Oh, I kind of clipped there a little bit. Sorry to everyone at home wearing headphones. He's got the sound levels like way up. I'm your host, John Lossville.
Did you just do an impression of Mark?
No. I'll just do an impression of me clipping. Like,
I just did an impersonation of me doing an impersonation of someone hearing John clipping with headphones on.
Anyway, guys, welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast, where clipping may or may not happen. I'm your host. I think I said that already. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So the other day, I was the Lamb. They have this podcast, and he asked me to come on to do this 1950s draft. And during the draft, this one guy started asking me about Kurt Russell. And he asked me, do you believe this, right? Kurt Russell, the sleeveless king shirt. King. He asked me what would happen if he just wore a t-shirt, and I lost it.
You mean he put on a t-shirt and then summarily rip off the sleeves?
No, he's like, well, what if he just wears a t-shirt? I'm like,
The answer to what if he just wore a t-shirt is then he would rip off the sleeves. Like, otherwise, the universe implodes on itself.
I mean, like I said, maybe he could get away with like a short sleeve V-neck. Or like a short sleeve Henley, because Snake Plissken would, or Jack Burton, they would never wear Ringer t-shirts.
No,
I got
no.
This is like my heart rate is increasing.
I know.
Just discussing this prospect, he either wears a suit or he wears no sleeves. There is no in between.
And on that movie Soldier, he had a little bit of a V, and that saved his life because during the fighting, he might have choked. When you have a V-neck, if someone tries to pull your shirt back, there's that V that prevents you from really getting choked.
You got that extra inches, and then it's a weaker point. It can tear.
That's right. And you do a little cut in it, you're full Hulk Hogan. Like, some guy goes to rip your shirt off. That thing's just – if some guy goes to choke you, your shirt is ripping off. You know what I mean? Like, it's his fault then because, you know, you're loose. You have nothing stopping you. But if you have a Ringer t-shirt and some guy pulls the back of your shirt, you're out. You're out in, like, 5 seconds. So, like, he said this to me, and I pulled a Chris Farley on the SNL when he got his coffee switch with other crystals. I almost lost it. Like, I jumped through the window. But, yeah, I mean, Kurt Russell wearing a T-shirt that's not a sleeveless shirt.
I feel like if you ever tried to wear, like, a regular shirt or, like a full-on suit, I feel like he wouldn't even have to do anything. Like, the shirt, like, sleeves will automatically fall off.
Yes.
If you tried to wear a suit. Which is why, like, he was only in Fast 7 for, like, so many scenes. The suit would just eventually decay until it became, like, a shirtless sleeve t-shirt. Like, a sleeveless t-shirt.
Yeah, like Tim Allen on Santa Claus. Whenever
exactly.
Shaved, the beard came right back.
Yeah.
So, like, whenever he puts on a shirt, the sleeves just go...
Yeah. Just no, I think that beard he had in Hateful Eight is when he just stopped shaving for, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah. He foamed the fur coat out of his beard.
Exactly.
And underneath that big fur coat, he had a sleeveless shirt.
Yeah. Wow. I think we just stumbled upon another Kurt Russell theory.
Yep.
It's actually the Kurt Russell clause.
Yep.
What if someone accidentally kills Kurt Russell and he becomes a new Kurt Russell? Like, he just grows like a mullet. His beard just goes crazy. And all of his shirts, like the sleeves, just fall off.
And like, what's going on? Work boots immediately.
Like, so I remember a couple episodes ago, you were ranking the X-Men movies, the X-Men universe movies, and Mark had really liked in Last Stand how, like, Wolverine kept cutting off that guy's arms, they kept growing back instantly. It's like, so he could keep, like, putting on a new shirt and a new shirt just over the old shirt, and the sleeves just keep falling off.
Oh my God, what's going on?
Like, and he's not even taking off the old shirt when the sleeves fall off. He just, like, it's like he's putting on tandem shirts, and just the sleeves are falling as he's reaching for the next shirt.
Like, and if he wears a V-neck, it's like a little slower of a process.
Yeah,
like it's like drinking 85 proof alcohol as opposed to 80 proof. Like, you know, there's just a little, you know, you're going to get drunk a little bit less with 80 proof. So the V-neck sort of saves the sleeves falling off really quickly.
Nice. John Lemongood, what's your Kurt Russell theory?
Well, you know, I'm just going to follow up with this, because as you were saying this, first I was getting, like, angry isn't the word. I felt like I was going to have a panic attack, and I don't get nervous about things. So it was really weird. But I started to come up with ideas, and they kind of helped me ease me out of it instead of breathing heavily. And I started thinking, like, what if Kurt Russell's armpit hair was like steel wool? And so that was wearing off the fiber at the bottom end. Oh, yeah. And what if his skin was like shark scales? And so, like, the sinew of his deltoids were working the whole top and front, right? And that's what wears it off gradually when he moves around. The steel wool at the bottom, the shark scales on the skin and the sinew at the top. So when he moves around, it just so if he stood perfectly still, if you were to literally hem a T-shirt with sleeves, a sleeved shirt around his body, and he stood still like David, like Michelangelo's David, it would stay there.
Right.
But even if it was a windy day, it would eventually wear off just from rubbing on his on his skin.
The sleeves have no chance.
And his steel wool armpit hair.
And he chops a lot of wood, and his sleeves are gone in an instant.
Yeah.
Like, when he pulls up the axe, like, over his head, his sleeves just fly up in the air.
Whoa.
And right now, like, I'm drinking this nice single-barrel Four Roses bourbon that, you know, like, just a little taste of Kentucky from when I lived there. And when you were just saying these things, like, no, but what if he just wore a T-shirt with sleeves? Like, I almost poured it on my keyboard like he did in The Thing when Chess Wizard beat him. Just, ooh.
How dare you?
But I wouldn't want to do that to Four Roses.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a waste.
Yeah. All right. That does it for our weekly Kurt Russell discussion. Or does it? Stay tuned.
Dun, dun, dun.
So I think it's time to start the podcast like we always do with listener questions. Mark, you got the questions for us this week, right?
That's right. The first one, you can't say Kurt Russell. This one is from Spellman. Interesting. And the question is, what creature/monster/animal would you ride into battle with? So any creature from any movie or monster, you know, the Kraken, any of that, what would you ride into battle?
Wait, is this like my friend Michael Spellman from whom you got this question?
No. This is Chris Spellman. But I didn't want to say Chris because everyone would think of Chris Kelly, that son of a bitch.
I'm sorry. I got a good friend named Mike Spellman who listens. I was just curious if he reached out to you, and I was thinking that traitor.
Yeah, we actually became really great friends behind your back.
No, he's my friend. Like, my friend. Sorry. Okay, so what monster, animal, creature would I ride into battle with?
Like anything, yeah. Like, hopefully.
So, Falcor.
Falcor?
Oh, yeah.
Falcor. Because it doesn't matter what I'm facing. You could have a Balrog, but I have luck.
But what if that, like, that furry little door, and you can sleep on him when you're kind of, you know, when you've landed on the ground.
Yeah, he looks comfy.
Yeah, but what if he gets killed? Like, that's just how it's
getting killed is a very unlucky thing that would never happen to him.
Oh, so but wouldn't that get boring?
Living?
Yeah. you can tell him from like Tampa, Florida.
It's like, well, what about when someone cold cocks him from behind? No, that's unlucky.
Wait, so when you're at a bar and you walk in front of somebody, you won't get punched in the face?
So no. You're stepping to Channing Tatum.
Yeah. So when you're dancing, you won't pull a hamstring?
No, wait. So I mean, initially I thought of a Balrog, or I thought I'd be on a Balrog, and then on me would be Yoda. So Yoda would be Master, I'd be Blaster, and then the Balrog would be the Blaster Bomb.
Well, you'd have to have like ice or something, because aren't Balrogs hot?
No, not for me.
You wear some chaps.
Levengood will be hot for the Balrog.
That's right.
It's like, oh, dude, man.
Yeah, you remember how hot I was getting when we were just recording, what was it, episode 62 when I was in Florida. I was just melting in the room. I think I just doused the Balrog with sweat.
There was like beads of baked bean sweat rolling down your face there, man.
I don't even eat that, but that still sounds funny.
All right, so we got Falcor with Yoda on your shoulders.
You know, it horrifies me to wonder, but I'm sure that there are listeners like right now out there who are like,
oh yeah, from Never Ending Story.
They're like, what the hell is Falcor and why can't he die because that's unlucky? It's like, because he's a luck dragon. 1984, The Never Ending Story, kids. I really hope you've seen that.
He's like that furry worm thing or whatever. Yes.
He's like a dog dragon.
Honestly, when I was a kid, that thing freaked me out. Like, it actually kind of, like, ugh. Like, why would you want to ride that, man?
You know how, like, when you first meet Falcor, you don't see him up close that much. You just see his head, right? And he looks like a furry, elongate dog, right? A snake-like long dog that flies, that's giant. But then later when he's sleeping, and I think it's, like, Billy Crystal or whatever, is that, not Billy Crystal, but someone, Mel Brooks or... Someone's that little weird guy who comes out.
That's his bride.
Oh, but he comes out and injects it. Remember, he injects the Falcor? No. He injects him with something.
I think you're making this up.
No. And then Falcor wakes up like, but the thing is that he injects him onto his back, and his back had scales. And I remember looking at that, not understanding what was going on. Like, why does the strip of his back like have scales? Like, I thought he had like mange or something when I was a kid. Like, I was thinking of like the dogs that my mom warned me not to go near that had patches missing. I thought it was like an unhealthy, like diseased luck dragon. That's not very lucky, so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So does he have fleas?
I don't know. Not on his back though, because it's all scales.
True.
On the back. But no, so really, so some little guy that's like Billy Crystal and the Princess Bride comes out and injects him. And those are those same little people who help take Atreyu across that chasm, like on the pulleys in the little like basket.
Man, I need to watch it. I just remember that. I don't remember any of this.
And all the people who are in their 20s who are listening or their teens are like, what are they smoking and working?
Here's what's happening. There's people who have no idea what's going on, and then there's people who love the movie so much they're pulling their hair out right now.
Just like, no! How do people not know what this is? Yeah. All right.
What do you got, Laz? What do you got?
I'm going to go with Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
You're going to Master Blaster it.
I'm just going to wait till he like walks underneath like somewhere. I'm just going to like stealthily just hop on his shoulders and just kind of ride him wherever he goes.
Dude, he would have his boxing gloves just like, so remember on the third Lord of the Rings when the Rohan charge, not the Rohan. Yeah. When the Rohan charge, into the battle, like, Dolph would be in front, and you'd be on his shoulders, and he'd just be throwing his fists out, punching his way through the entire line. Like,
and I'd be the safest guy in the battle. I'd be the safest guy in the battle.
Like, he would have his boxing gloves just knocking orcs' heads off.
It would be funny. You know how, like, when they charge, like, you just see the two sides charge, and they just, like, mix together as the lines of horses meet, right? But instead, like, you actually see, like, them part ways like a stream around a submerged rock. Like, they just totally avoid Dolph Lundgren. And whenever he moves towards them, the whole battlefield shifts to accommodate this like 10-foot safety radius around him.
And like, even the elephants run away from him. Like,
even the people on his side are like, when he moves, they pull their enemies out of the way. Like, yo, whoa, you almost got hit by Ardolf Lundgren. That's a fate no one should befall.
And like, John would have like an iPod and speakers playing the Rocky IV soundtrack.
Oh yeah,
like,
ooh.
The only thing that I could see killing Lasvath is when he starts doing the spin. Like, if he just starts he puts his fists out, right?
Yeah.
And he just starts running in circles. Like, I feel bad for you, Laz, when you're on top of his shoulders.
I'm just going to have to hold on tight.
Yeah. Like, I just want to see a clip, right, where there's this massive battle, and, like, you kind of have to squint, right? You're like, is that?
Yeah.
Pause it. Rewind it. Is that Ivan Drago in the background?
Like, he's even wearing his Soviet shorts in this Lord of the Rings battlefield.
What else would he wear in the battle?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what, whose coat of arms is that? It's like, that's his.
Yeah. Yeah.
The House of Drago.
And you probably have some mallet. I picture you with mallets or something, just bonking people on the head that he misses.
No, I'm just chilling.
Like a Donkey Kong mallet.
I'm just chilling.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably hard enough work holding on to him.
Oh, yeah. Because he's got a thick neck.
Yeah. Does he have, like, stirrups that you put your feet into, like gun holsters, but, like, you put your feet into?
No, I'm just barebacking it.
Gotcha. So. I love it. This is awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so wait, would it be like Yoda on the back of Luke?
A little bit, but like Ivan Drago would have no idea I'm there.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I believe what you meant to say was, would that be like Yoda on the back of John on the back of a Balrog?
That's right. And you're not worried about the heat.
No.
that did kind of put a dampener on it. That's no good.
So I think I picked something that could take both you guys out.
Did you pick the Deadpool unicorn?
Nope. This isn't a competition, right? But I picked the Cave Trolls from Battle of the Five Armies with the catapults on their backs.
Oh, that's actually pretty cool.
Because you guys know that I love catapults. Like, I don't know why, but I love trebuchets. That movie Timeline, I watch it constantly just to learn about the trebuchets. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm obsessed with catapults.
Well, and you know, this is our 64th podcast episode, and I wouldn't be shocked if in more than 20 of them we've mentioned a cave troll.
Yeah, like, I love, you know, but like, so what I would do is I would fix like a great recliner, like a little wooden seat, and he would just be running around, and I would stop outside of the battle, right? And I'd be like, I'd be working the catapult, shooting boulders, like from the safety of wherever, you know, like. So I'm chilling. I'm riding a cave troll and I'm shooting catapults. Like, life doesn't get better than this. You know what I mean? No, like
I think it'd be a little. I wouldn't want to be right next to that thing when it's catapulting.
I mean, I'd figured it out. So I'm, you know, it's a long journey for wherever they're going. So I'm just working on the catapult 24/7. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know me. Like, when I get my brain on something, I gotta perfect it. Yes. So this catapult is Hoffmeyerized.
Hoffmeyerized.
So between you flying around, John on Drago, and me with the like ogre, we would decimate armies. Because what Drago would do, everybody would just be running away from him, and then you'd be corralling him, and then I'd be shooting boulders at him.
This would be an amazing battle scene.
Yes. I love catapults, guys.
Wow.
And when you put them on the back of a cave troll, which I love too, it doesn't get any better than that. Like, I would bring a cooler. You know, I would have grog. I would have mead. I would have wine. Mm. I would bring breakfast, second breakfast, third breakfast, lunch, second lunch.
Man, I want to be there.
Yeah.
That reminds me again. So when I was gone, you guys were having some fun with me, and I just heard those episodes that I missed recently, those 59 to 61, yeah. And how you were talking about me on a work trip, but it looked like I was just eating my way through the Northeast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, guys, I'm doing a lot of work here.
You're like, it's 11 a.m. I see a double-decker pizza.
Mm. Yeah, like an 8-pound burger at 9 a.m. It's like, geez Louise. Yeah, guys, hard at work here. And then there's like a paper right next to the burger. So it makes it seem like it. You know, like, just working hard.
The paper just says science on it.
Yeah, exactly. Working hard, guys. You know, like 12-pound Philly cheesesteak.
Oh, man, you're making me hungry.
All right, so the next question. Who wins? Alec Baldwin. These are the actors who play Jack Ryan. Alec Baldwin, Harrison Ford, Ben Affleck, Chris Pine, and John Krasinski, who is from The Office, but he's going to be in the Jack Ryan TV show, versus Michael Keaton, the Batman, Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, George Clooney, Christian Bale, and Ben Affleck. I left out Adam West because I wanted 5-on-5. Okay. Who wins? The actors who play Jack Ryan or the actors who play Batman? And this one is from DJ, by the way. DJ asked me this question.
Are they going to be in character?
They better be.
Yes, they're in character, but they're the actors.
Okay.
So I gotta go with, I'm going with Christian Bale, because in that movie The Big Short, his back was really bad, so he couldn't walk around much, but he was like really like big and lean. And I think him and Super Affleck could take out Jack Ryan Affleck, right? So Christian Bale could wipe out anybody on this squad. So I think Alec Baldwin could get rid of Michael Keaton pretty quick. I think Val Kilmer and Chris Pine would be swinging away. I think George Clooney would get knocked out by Harrison Ford eventually, right? Yeah. Like, so Harrison Ford knocks out Clooney. But by then, Super Affleck had knocked out Little Affleck. So then Super Affleck does some, you know, jumps on Harrison Ford, right? Just tackles him, you know, starts beating him up. Christian Bale's already finished Krasinski, right? Even though he's pretty big now, but he finished off Krasinski. Then he goes, starts clubbing on Alec Baldwin. Like, I think by sheer, I think the Batman got it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So. Well,
first off, I don't see a good argument for the Batman team not winning, but at the same time, I had trouble picking a winner.
Hmm. What'd you say, Laz?
Yeah, did you didn't go CIA, did you?
Well, I'm thinking about it, and you said, like, they're in character, but they're still the actors, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like the Batman actors, like, they would be in character. They would wear the Batman suits, but they're not actually Batman. So I feel like them wearing those suits would just kind of slow them down, like, encumber them. You know, and they're not, yeah, you know, actually Bruce Wayne. So it's going to get hot. They're going to get sweaty. They're going to get distracted.
But Christian Bale and Ben Affleck can do some mean pull-up action.
You can't say the same for, like, Michael Keaton or Val Kilmer. George Clooney probably doesn't need to do any type of exercise ever.
Just lift a martini glass.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm looking at the list for the Jack Ryans, and they're a pretty scrappy group here. I mean, you got Harrison Ford, Chris Pine, Krasinski, like, you know. I mean, he's buff now, but, like, even before he was buff, like, he could, like, pull some mean pranks on you. Yeah. Alec Baldwin, he's got like a notorious mean streak about him, so I feel like he could use that to his advantage somehow.
I feel like Alec Baldwin would never throw a punch. He would just get dad mad at you, or like angry man at you.
He would send you an angry voicemail.
Yeah, he would just try to, like, grab you.
Yeah.
Like, he might throw a low ball glass at you.
Yeah.
Like, he'd throw it, but he's not actually trying to hit you. He's just trying to throw it near you, because even though you dodge it, it hits the wall behind you, the glass shatters, and it, like, a fragment gets in your face and distracts you.
Plus,
lowball glasses.
I feel like he would also inspire the group, like, right before the battle. Like, he gives that famous Glenn Glary, Glenn Ross speech. Always be closing. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, I got to give it to the Jack Ryans.
Well, see, I'm saying my characters are in Bruce Wayne mode, not Batman mode.
Oh, okay.
So they're but they're in tuxes, though. I envision tuxes. So can you swing a lot in a tux?
I mean, you just hulk your way out of it and tear out the back.
Oh, like you're swinging. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went a very, like, Mortal Kombat route with this. I was actually picking the characters versus the characters.
Ah.
So I picked the five iterations of Batman on a team versus the five iterations of Jack Ryan on a team. And so what I came up with was, first off, Batfleck is going to crush CIA Fleck.
Yeah.
Especially since Sum of All Fears or whatever it was, CIA Fleck, he's like, oh, I'm in the CIA. Oh, hey, honey. Like, he couldn't throw a punch yet. He's gone, right? Mm-hmm. Solved. So then Michael Keaton Batman, he's going to beat Baldwin Jack Ryan.
Ooh.
It's not going to be easy,
Jack Ryan.
But he's going to do it. But he's going to do it, right? Now, I think that Harrison Ford Jack Ryan, however, see, he was in three movies, and he always had his shit together. So he's, like, you know, planning and everything, and he handles George Clooney and Val Kilmer Batman simultaneously by himself.
I think with one punch, too. Because right? That Harrison Ford punch from Patriot Games and Cleaner Present Danger just sort of, like, it feels like he should throw his back out when he throws his punch. Like, as soon as he, like, it feels like his shoulder should go first, and then his back should, like a disc should herniate. And then he should just collapse on the ground screaming.
But instead of saying Hadouken, he'll say, like, herniate, herniate, and he punches.
But yeah, he punches Clooney, like, so he hits Clooney in the face, and then Clooney flies back and headbutts Val Kilmer. They're out.
So Then I think that Christian Bale Batman is going to beat Chris Pine and John Krasinski solo.
Ooh.
And then, unfortunately, there's going to be a battle between Bale Batman, Batfleck, and Michael Keaton all against Harrison Ford. That's all who's left on these two sides. And I'm really not comfortable picking a winner. Even with those three powerful Batmans all teaming up against Harrison Ford, across his three movies, he really has his shit together.
Well, he did two.
He did three.
He did Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger.
Wasn't there a third that he did?
He did Clear and More Clear Present Danger.
Oh, yeah. I could have sworn he did three. Okay, he did two. I don't care. He was,
that's how I learned my Irish accent was from Patriot Games, those three sentences.
What three sentences?
Oh, I'm not going to say it. It's bad.
Come on.
So I'm like, this is me as a 10-year-old, right? I used to say this as a 10-year-old, like people that I met. You ain't going to make me wear a rubber, are you? I used to say that to people. And then there's another one I forgot.
Yeah. Did you know what that was?
Yeah, because I was watching like Reservoir Dogs at the time. I was a feral little child. Just covered in dirt.
I don't know how to react if a 10-year-old... They're like, oh, you're going to make me wear rubber. And I'm like,
I would high-five that 10-year-old and take him out for a whiskey.
I would have, like, stole some cream soda from you and ran away on my bike.
I'm like, no, I'm not going to make you wear rubber. You're 10 years old. Get away from me.
Jeez Louise. Oh. So we got, I think so all of us have Batman. Oh, we have a draw. And then we have, oh, so it's a tie.
Yeah,
we have, I guess so. Batman, Jack Ryan, and then a tie. So it's a tie.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if my three Batmen got Harrison Ford in a room, that's it, right? Obviously. Any one of those Batmen in a room with Harrison Ford. But the thing is that Harrison Ford's too good. That Jack Ryan is too good to ever end up in a room with even one of them, let alone all three of them. So then does he just tactically nuclear strike them like with surgical precision? That's why I'm not comfortable even picking.
Yeah, like it's, and on Patriot Games, there's that boat chase at the end that he gets away from Sean Bean. And then there's that amazing action scene in Clear and Present Danger where all the guys are like, move, 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 move. So he would always be moving. It'd be like the Raid. It would be like the Raid, but with Harrison Ford dodging three Batmen.
As the Batmen are just raiding their way through, like, all these poor Indonesian warriors who get killed.
And it's just, he has to, like, pop in his shoulder every second, too, Harrison Ford, because he's throwing it out with every punch.
All right, well, I feel good about that Harrison Ford or my Batman, or no one is actually being declared a winner. I can sleep. I can sleep tonight. That's cool.
Cool. So the answer to that question is nobody wins.
And we're not like, this isn't morals. We're not saying nobody wins in a fight, guys. We're saying literally nobody wins.
Yeah.
No, I mean, someone would actually win, but no matter who wins, I'm going to be upset.
There we go.
That's what it is.
This isn't an after school special, people.
Yeah. All right. Thank you once again for those listener questions. Yeah. I think now's time to move on to the meat of the podcast. Of this wonderful sandwich we call movies, films, and flicks. Mark, what's on the menu today? Let's see what it did.
That was a great segue.
Thank you.
I was just thinking about like what kind of bread, you know, like what kind of sandwich is, but that takes too long. So
you ever notice like sandwiches are never named after the bread? It's always the meat.
Yeah, it's never like the pumpernickel surprise.
Yeah, it's like, you know, sometimes I like the bread more than the meat.
A sourdough melt?
Yeah. I don't know. Ooh. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, that sounds great.
You don't need to tell me what's in the middle.
Yeah, give me a 5-grain melt.
Yeah. I don't know what's in there.
That almost sounds like a brown liquor.
Oh yeah, it does.
Give me a 5-grain melt. It's like with an orange peel. That sounds awesome. It's
a couple orange bitters. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like a cube of sugar. Stir for 25 seconds in a chilled glass.
Just put a large ice cube.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin's gonna be drinking the hell out of that thing.
I ordered a rye sandwich. They put beef tongue in there.
And then he's gonna thwart off a Batman by throwing that glass at somebody.
He's gonna breathe on him. All right, so guys, if you've been listening to the pod for a while, and if you haven't, we have a theme here at Movies, Films, and Flicks that we've been doing since 2011, and they're called the Random Awards. So instead of doing Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Cinematography, Best Costumes, we do Best Nap, we do Best Arm Grab, we do Best Sneeze, we do Best Spin Kick while spin kicking. These awards are irreverent, they're fun, they're inane, and basically. We did one last year. I think we've done two already. I write one every year for my mid-year random awards, and then I do my end-of-the-year random awards. And it's just become a staple of Movies, Films, and Flicks, so we're incorporating it into the podcast. And now that, you know, we're 6 months into 2016, we are going to do the mid-year random awards.
Done. All right. You know, remember way early in our episodes, I think it was only like episode two of our podcast when we did Attack of the Randoms. And that was when it was first introduced, when we first started talking about in that Chris Pine movie with the train. What was that called?
Oh, Unstoppable?
No. I'm not Chris Pine. Chris Evans. Chris Evans on the train.
Oh, Snowpiercer.
And Snowpiercer. When we started talking about dipping the axe in the fish and talking about drop kicks and Chris Evans and tackling were in like the next three episodes.
I mean, that's a great theme. If some dude's sticking a knife into fish, I'm going to kick him while he's sticking that knife into the fish.
That's a drop kick.
That's right.
I'm going to tackle him.
Both feet into his chest, and there's going to be like gray marks on the white shirt of the feet.
Shaped like feet.
Yep. All right, so to start us off, I'm going to jump to you, Lazavath. What's your first random award?
Okay, my first random award for the mid-year 2016. That's a good time, yep. I guess.
Mid-year random awards?
Yeah. I'm going to go with Bess Henley, all right?
Ooh.
Is it Timothy Olyphant in whatever he was in?
No.
Is it Ryan Gosling?
He was a close second, actually. I'm going to go with Captain America: Civil War.
Ooh.
And the award goes to... Now, this is a movie that had a lot of great, great fashion choices. The Vision wore that really great sweater.
I mean, perfect sweater.
Yeah.
That was basically if Mark was transformed into a Marvel hero.
Yeah.
Yes.
both of you, without fault. Yes.
Yeah. I would wear sweaters. I would.
Yeah.
You would wear that sweater.
I would.
Scarlett Johansson looked great in whatever she was wearing.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to give it to Sebastian Stan, a.k.a. Oh, yeah. The Winter Soldier, for Best Henley of the Year, or mid-year, 2016. Because, he really rocked that Henley.
You know? And it went through a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was on the run, right? He wanted he tried to buy some fruit, but he never got it. I think
he never got his plum.
Yeah. He battled like Giant Man and Iron Man and all them, and just like, you know, he still made that Henley look good. So yeah.
I mean, dude, he survived a lot. Like that all right, so Levengood, how big are his arms?
Dude. Like, first off, he's like 6'1" and a half or 6'2", isn't he?
Yeah.
He has to have like 19 and a half inch arms. Because I've got like 17 and a halves. And for my build, I do not think that they look big at all. And I'm 6'3". Like, I think that his – man, he's big. Those are big arms. When he was just resting, remember when you saw him when his arms were out and he had like the, you know, those electronic manacles, things they come over his wrists and the chair. I was looking at his arm like, is that an arm double? But I know I was really looking at him like in the next five scenes he was in, like, does that dude really have that arm? And I realized he does. But I don't know if his arm was that big in the first one, though.
But see, that Henley had to fit over that arm.
Yeah.
Boy, I think that they stitched that Henley around his body.
So does he do that? So in the movie, right?
Yeah.
The character himself does his own stitching.
Well, maybe the Henley was given to him as part of the Winter Soldier program. Right? Ooh. You know, it helps identify Winter Soldiers out in the field, you know,
And the Henley colors?
Yeah.
Remember way back in the 80s in Twins when Arnold Schwarzenegger is on the date with the girl, like the two sisters? He was with the blonde sister, and he was nervous, and he was leaning away from her, and his arm was kind of like almost in a muscle pose where his head is resting on his fist, mm-hmm. and it's like flexed, and as he leans away and it tightens his arm up, it actually tore the sleeve of his shirt. I feel like that would happen to Sebastian Stan.
Yeah, the Winter Soldier character.
I don't even know how he gets that shirt sleeve over those biceps.
I mean, I think it must be a genetically modified. It's a super Henley.
Yeah. Like, they're made out of Spider-Man's web.
It's a super Henley. Because he survived slipping from motorcycles, jumping everywhere. Like, there's no rips, there's no tears. It stayed, you know, it didn't get stretched out. You know, no one could choke him because it's a Henley.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, wow.
Dude, what if Colossus and Deadpool wore a Henley and then he'd be immune to Gina Carano's attack?
I could see it. No one wants to punch somebody wearing a Henley.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why Oliphant came out so smoothly out of Live Free or Die Hard.
That's right. I mean, you know, if you wear a Henley, everyone likes you automatically.
Yeah. It's like, this guy knows how to be fashionable, but he's also not trying too hard.
Yep.
Like, I like him.
So if I work for the CIA, I'd be like, I think that's a Winter Soldier. I don't think the Winter Soldier would be wearing a Henley.
No, no.
I'm gonna let Rodrigo. Let him go. He's got a Henley. What do you think?
I was thinking the same thing.
All right. You wanna go get a plum?
Yeah.
Okay. I love these two guys.
They just
all right.
Plum meaning government officials. That's why Winter Soldier never got his plums. Yep. They bought all the plums.
It was a conspiracy.
Oh my goodness!
Conspiracy. All right, what we're
saying. All right, Lev, what do you got?
All right, look. Back in 2005, when this website and podcast didn't exist, but back in 2005, the movie Boogeyman won the award that we're going to be doing today, and that was because back in Boogeyman, someone held up an action figure, and it totally destroyed the Boogeyman at the end of the movie. So this award for this year is for the easiest dismissal of an otherwise highly powerful demon. And it goes to The Conjuring 2. Now, we talked about this, but come on. It had me thinking about other movies where this actually happens. When, like, these bad guys are so powerful. Like the evil nun thing, the demon nun and The Conjuring 2. So powerful, so menacing, so deadly. You say Valak. It's gone. It's like, oh shit, I left the stove on. I've got to go stop haunting you. Like, yeah. I got to go. And back in Boogeyman, dude held up an action figure that was kind of scary that gave him nightmares as a kid. Boogeyman's gone. All throughout that movie, that Boogeyman killed like 4 people.
Dude, I had a great bit about the Boogeyman back in the day.
About that Barry Allen, whatever his name, not Barry Allen.
But I had a good bit. I had a bit. You know when you got a good bit?
Yeah.
Like, I had a great bit that I used to use on people about the Boogeyman.
About the movie The Boogeyman.
Yeah, but I had a bit that I would do. Like, if I did stand-up, it'd be part of my tight five.
Well, what was the what was the bit?
I don't remember. Oh. I was too drunk back then.
Like,
this isn't the bit. It's just a tribute.
Think of it this way, right? Like, the Ernst Scared Stupid Troll. Now, that troll was extremely dangerous for whatever a PG movie.
Terrible.
So it's turning people to stone. It's like ravaging the town out of that tree. It's
murdering children.
Now, Mark, if we just walked in knowing what we know, we would just fill 2 super soakers with milk and boom, there's no troll.
Yeah.
That's it. It's like we just go in, we'd high five. Like the Gozer scene in Ghostbusters, and we would just plow that troll, and that would be it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't shoot him in my house. I'd draw him out of the house and shoot him because I'm not cleaning that up.
Boy, you just created a movie scenario to give us 90 minutes instead of 5 minutes because now it's going to get away. It's going to outsmart us. It's going to go for one of your cats to turn it to stone.
I would pick it up and.
And then we'll be compromised. Like, see what you just did? You just gave him an otherwise highly powerful demon that is otherwise easily dismissed.
Oh, gosh.
I'm telling you, you got to watch out for those MEAC trolls. They get you where it hurts. Mm-hmm. And it's going to go for Stella.
And they knew it's – oh. Ooh. This is like a Kurt Russell Ringer t-shirt conversation here.
Like, Stella is one of Mark's cats that he's had for, God,
five years. Yeah,
5 years.
She's my sweetheart.
Like, I mean, it would go for the cat.
I would pick up the troll and spin him around in a circle by his feet, and I'd throw him into a cow, a dairy cow, and he would explode through the dairy cow and die because of the milk.
You would. Was John that dairy Cena. Cow in your living room?
Yes.
Is that where that was?
You would pull a John Cena on him, is what you're saying.
That's right. I put him on my cave troll's catapult.
Nice.
Like, this whole movie, though, and then she's like, and then she had to, like, run up to the house and not say it. I'm like, just say it, Vera.
Just, hey, evil demon who's about to kill my husband and that little girl, I'm still talking while you're just sitting there in the corner while he's, like, waiting to fall on the tree of death. I'm still talking to you because I'm Vera Farmiga and I need a monologue or something. And then she finally says Valak. And then it's just like, poof. Like, that was... Boom!
I wish it would have gone that quick, though. Like, yeah, but
like
the final noise, Valak. All right, I love it.
What would happen? Because again, I talked about the other week, but like, really, she was scribbling it in the Bible. She looks. She's like, oh, what'd I write? Valak. I wonder why. Then later, the demon's a problem, and she's like, oh, Valak, done. End movie. 25 minutes. 25-minute movie.
Yep. But then we wouldn't have Patrick Wilson covering Elvis.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
Which I do maintain, like, I thought that the Elvis ghost was going to come out.
Hey, Patrick Wilson, I'll let me join you for a do it. You
know, I thought that, like, some, like, ectoplasm was going to, like, smoke out of Patrick Wilson's ear, and it would be the spirit of Elvis.
Hey, how about you make me a banana sandwich?
That is a really interesting impression of Elvis. So
what you do, you take a couple pieces of bread, and you toast it. And you take.
I don't know who that is,
then but you, it's then you take a banana, and then you take some marshmallow fluff, and then some honey.
Kids, you stay away from that man. That is not Elvis.
And then you take it, and you push the banana.
Valak!
what happened there, guys? I got disconnected.
Yeah. I blacked out.
All right, so my award is... all right, sorry. Here we go. Huh? What? Really? No. Wait? Huh? What? Really? You made this? $140 million? Who signed off on this? Really? Huh? Jerry Butler? Egypt? Gods? Huh? Award.
That's a lot of, like, hyphens and dot, dot, dots.
And it's for Gods of Egypt, which is a $140 million movie that Lionsgate wanted to turn into a franchise, but it feels like they shot it in 2001, forgot about it, and then they're like, I guess just release it.
Was there any marketing for that movie? Because
they had a Super Bowl commercial.
Really?
Like, yeah, and it's by the guy who directed The Crow and Dark City. But this movie is about a bunch of white dudes who play Egyptian gods.
Right.
And you don't get time to know any of the characters. I don't remember any of their names, even though Horus, because he's a god. But like, it's basically all the women are in like plunging necklines. There's like tons of like cleavage, and then there's tons of Jerry Butler with a Scottish accent playing an Egyptian god. There's Jeffrey Rush as some bald dude fighting a giant worm. No time is spent on it. Oh, and Nicolas Waldo Coster, the guy who plays Jamie Lannister in Game of Thrones, he is the worst runner I've ever seen on screen.
Oh yeah, that's true. There's something wrong with his hips.
I think he's a great warrior. I think he's a good actor. I like him in Game of Thrones. This movie Headhunters, he's really good in. But in this movie, when he's running, I'm like, what is happening? What? In this movie, it makes no sense. It has Chadwick Boseman, who played Black Panther, and he's all sassy. And like, it's just.
Oh, that's right. He was Thoth.
Yeah, it's a CGI blob of a movie. It is the biggest blob. And they make these stupid jokes. And it's like, who gave these people $140 million to make this movie? You know, they shot it in Australia for 46% tax break, but they wouldn't even let them shoot in the studio, so they had to use an old hangar.
Ooh.
And, like, this movie, Did one person ever go, hey, so this is a movie about Egyptian gods and we're using Jerry Butler? Is he going to use an accent? No.
No.
Is he going to be Scottish? Yeah. So we have a Scottish Jerry Butler playing a god who's supposed to be Egyptian. Yeah. It's great. It's great. Like, this movie.
Well, and Nikolai, that last name, Nikolai, like, he's talking like he is Jaime Lannister.
Yeah.
Like, he's still Jaime Lannister. So, like, he stepped off the set of Game of Thrones and changed nothing but his wardrobe in terms of his mentality. And they're like, Jaime Lannister, you lost an eye instead of a hand. And then they go to Gerard Butler and they're like, hey, you know the way you talk and everything? Just keep doing it.
Yeah.
Like, whatever movie you did with Katherine Heigl, remember you were just talking like a Scotsman? That's cool. You're just an Egyptian god now.
Just ugly truth it. Just ugly truth it.
I had almost come up with a, you know, like the whitewashing award that everyone else was talking about on the internet, because every time they do an Egypt movie, this seems to happen. Now, I loved The Prince of Egypt, right? I loved it back in 1998. But Ralph Fiennes and Val Kilmer were our two Egyptian and or Hebrew leads, and neither of them are either?
Nope.
Okay, and then in 2014, Exodus, we have Joel Edgerton, right?
Christian Bale.
And Christian Bale. And they are playing our Egyptians and Sigourney Weaver. Hebrew. And now we have these two other white guys. Like, they can't even give us a Jewish person, let alone someone with a little bit of, like, African Arabic blood or something. Like, we can't just... What is going on? Yeah. Because as great as Prince of Egypt was, I'm sure we didn't have the internet like thriving in 1998 the same way as now. But I'll bet a lot of people like in their living rooms were talking like, were those just two white guys playing Pharaoh and Moses? That was it a Jewish guy? No. Was it an Egyptian, like an Arabic? No. Okay. Like that had to be. This is a theme that keeps happening.
Yeah. And like, the movie itself is just not good. Like, it goes so, like, the only interesting thing for this movie was it was two of the women, the Morton Joe's wives were in it.
Really?
Yeah, one of them rode a snake, that stupid snake.
And that then, almost albino looking one, yeah, with the whitish hair.
And okay. Then the girlfriend, she was also one of the five, Zaya or whatever her name was. She was one of the, so two of the five were in this movie. And the only good line in this movie, this girl, so Set takes over Jerry Butler, and he's like, everyone's going to be poor, so when they go into the afterlife, they can't go to the afterlife. And this girl, she dies, and she's going to go to, you know, she has no money to pay for the afterlife, and she goes, oh, my smile isn't enough? Like, I thought that was kind of funny. But other than that, this movie has no – I just love that $140 million movie that looked like it was filmed in 2001 was a tentpole movie for Lionsgate.
You know – something else is like, so we were talking about Hush not long ago, back at episode 62, right? And you made the point that even though it's a home invasion movie and the guy was really sick who was fought, it wasn't a mean-spirited movie. This kind of is, and it's like an effects blockbuster that largely takes place during the day. Like, a brother defies his other brother and rips out his eyes and... You know, like, they're just flat out trying to kill each other. Like, this was actually – and then then with Ra, the father, and, like, not getting along properly with him. This was, like, a very cold movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even started with that dude trying to steal a dress for his love.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, he stole her away from his family and just steals her stuff.
I mean, it was – it didn't seem sweet. It wasn't like Aladdin trying to steal a rose to be sweet. He was like, I'm trying to steal you this really nice dress. It was basically just like some trashy dude on an episode of Cops who just hasn't been caught yet.
Yeah, like, and you're supposed to like him, but you're like, wait, he just stole from that vendor. And he didn't have to.
Dude, like, that might have taken that dressmaker, like, a month to make that dress.
It fit her perfectly, too.
Of course it did. They wrote it in brackets in the script. He's like, here, try it on. And print in brackets. Fits perfectly.
I think I read on a Vulture review of it, there's more plunging neckline than there's fabric. I thought that was pretty funny. But it's not a good movie. All right, Last Path, what's your next award?
Actually, before I give out my next award, now's a good time to take a break.
Yeah. Actually.
So stay tuned for that. I know you're all in suspense already. All right, guys. See you in a little bit.
When I say pod, you say
pie.
Wait a minute.
Whoa. What's going on, Kyle?
Take your headphones off real quick.
Okay, sorry.
John, what the hell is this?
Oh, I don't know. Robert invited me over.
I don't know. This is kind of awkward. Are we doing like a promo or something?
I don't know. I wish we put on his pants, though.
Yeah, he's like dancing around. He's talking about Sharp Dropper.
I think he's looking for the baby oil.
Anyways, Robert, what are we doing? Huh? What are we doing?
What was that? I can put my headphones back on?
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing a promo for Shark Dropper.
Oh, okay.
That podcast we do that has improv, and we just talk about our daily lives and stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I still wish you'd find your pants.
Where can I find it?
Oh, wait. Are we supposed to wear a podcast? Sharkdropper.com.
Short shot time.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. You know what? We were actually... We just had like a quick little discussion about Hot Rod and how great that movie was. What a great underrated comedy.
I mean, that's a gem.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of those movies you say it's an underrated gem, and you wouldn't sound ridiculous.
It was the Lonely Island's first movie, right? Yeah. It had the Andy Samberg and all those guys in there. Also, Danny McBride before he got big. So.
Bill Hader.
Yeah.
Wasn't Ian McShane the dad?
Yeah, he was the stepdad. And Andy Samberg and Sissy Spacek, like... Andy Samberg had to beat him up to earn his respect.
Isla Fisher is in there.
Oh, yeah. And there's that karate, that's a point roadhouse Tai Chi scene where she makes him crap himself.
Oh, and weren't you just in love with that guy who was just dancing like randomly?
Oh, I was. Oh, my gosh. I thought that dude. Wait, were you saying that to me?
Yeah.
I thought that dude was the best. I talked about that guy all the time, the dancing guy. That was awesome. Yeah. I love that dude.
So for those of you listening, if you have managed to catch Popstar and you love that movie, but you've never seen Hot Rod, go check out Hot Rod.
Yep.
Excellent.
And if you hated Popstar.
Just go watch Hot Rod anyway.
That's right.
All right. Mark, I think you have another listener question for us.
I do. And this one is from Chad. And
what's up, Chad?
You just said that like you were a bully about to pick on Chad.
I work with him.
Oh, okay.
Do you pick on him at work?
We beat up on Chad. I think we left him somewhere a few weeks ago.
How's it going, Chad?
I don't know how his battery's still going, but, you know. But his question is, what cinematic band would you want to be part of?
Dude, Steel Dragon from Rockstar. I'd be backing Mark Wahlberg on the guitar.
And Timothy Oliphant?
Why not?
Timothy Oliphant's in that band.
Yeah, he was the Slash guy.
He was the
guy who was like Slash.
So you're rocking out with Mark Wahlberg. You're what was it? Lone Star?
Steel Dragon.
Two Star?
Steel Dragon, damn it. It's a great band.
I'm never going to remember that name. I got to work Steel Dragon.
Dude, their music in that movie was awesome. Like, I just wanted that band to be a real band.
Covered Wagon.
And to go be a roadie for them.
Didn't that movie, I think that movie came out in 2001, right? That's when all the theaters were really dead. Because I think I was working in a theater when it came out. And just no one was coming. I think
they should have come because, you know, I mean, you got Jennifer Aniston in there. You got Mark Wahlberg in there.
You got the font, man. You got the font.
Fanting around. And it had that scene where Jennifer Aniston is like making out with Mark Wahlberg. Like, it's like a pretty hot scene. And then she pierces his nipple.
What?
You don't remember? Yeah, she pierces his nipple in that. And it like hurt me so bad.
On the dance floor?
No. Like, they're in his bedroom, right? And they're making out. And while they're making out a little bit, she's icing his nipple because she's going to pierce it so he can look like the lead singer of Steel Dragon because he was in a Steel Dragon tribute band. In the movie. And then Steel Dragon's lead singer leaves and they liked him because he could hit the notes and he became the new lead singer of actual Steel Dragon in the movie. So, but before that happened, he wanted to be just like him. His hair was like him. He wanted to pierce his nipples just like the lead singer. And so, like, in the movie, though, you see, like, a nipple get pierced. I feel like it was actual footage of a real nipple getting pierced.
Yeah, that movie was 2001. I remember it.
It was 2001, yeah.
It's bad. The only reason I remember it, because nobody came to the theaters. Like, Behind Enemy Lines, Zoolander, all those movies tanked. And then Bourne Identity brought it back.
Hmm. Whatever. It was all pretty special. And I like Dominic West. No, Dominic West, he was the one who was like Slash. That's right.
He was the Slash guy. I'm typing in Timothy Oliphant rock star. And if he's not wearing a Henley, I'm going to start swinging.
They list him as blood. He was in Blood Pollution. He was in the other lead Steel Dragon cover band that was dueling with Mark Wahlberg's Steel Dragon cover band.
And he's wearing a T-shirt. This is, I don't like this.
This big hair.
I gotta get out of here.
But that band though, that music. I thought that music was awesome. That music, that fictitious band's music affected me as much as the reenactment band music in Straight Outta Compton.
Hmm.
Like, those two movies are like my number one, like, I don't know, band movies.
Gotcha.
Wait, now I want to be in Straight Outta Compton. Now I want to be in NWA. Crap.
No, wait, fictional, I guess I should have said.
All right. In that case, Steel Dragon, my backup is the old school band that did Total Eclipse of the Heart.
The Total. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, we can use our PG-13. And I need you more than fucking ever. All right, what about you, Laz?
Okay, so the first band that comes to mind is Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
You know, but you don't want to be the drummer.
No, no. But I always have, like, that speaker that goes up to 11.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you just make that 10? I'm like, no, because it goes up to 11.
And then Stonehenge?
Yeah. I don't know, but Spinal Tap actually comes in second, right? As much as, you know, as fun as it looks, like, to be a part of the band, I think this band, like, it just looks like they're having fun, or, like, he's having fun all the time. It's basically, it looks like a one-man band, but I don't know what his name is, but it was the guy playing the flame throwing guitar in Mad Max.
You want to be the
Dufourier? That was the guy who did their soundtrack, Something XL.
Yeah, I want to be part of his band. I feel like it would just be exciting times.
Oh, so you wouldn't be the Dufourier. You would be one of the drummers.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I feel like that'd be amazing. Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to worry about jumping from your vehicle to another vehicle. You just got to hit the right notes.
Yeah, exactly. And if I hit the wrong notes, like, I'll get a face full of fire. Yeah. It's like, you're fired.
Oh, and I mean, who notices, right, though? Like, you know how you're wrong? Like, can you really blame somebody for hitting the wrong note while in a speed chase over, like, very rocky terrain?
Yeah.
It depends on if you're Morton Joe or not. Like, I'll bet a Morton Joe will saw off an arm over that.
He looks at you and goes, mediocre. You're B-flat.
I bet you the guy's pretty demanding, right?
Yeah.
It's like, he's got, like, a lot to deal with. He's got to put on a show while at the same time chasing Mad Max and Furiosa. Yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like he's just, like, super stressed all the time, just trying to put on a good show. So he expects the best out of everybody.
He's like, he's like J.K. Simmons from Whiplash.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, he is. You would be a drummer, and he'd be like the band leader.
Drum faster!
But you just have these huge mallets, and you're like, dunk, 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 faster! Dunk, 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 too fast! Dunk, 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 no, slower! Dunk, dunk. Faster. Dun, dun, dun. Slower.
Compose me a Valhalla hymn.
Bum, bum, bum. Bum, 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 bum.
Idiot. Bum, bum.
Wait, what? So a Whiplash.
I miss Fury Road. I want more Fury Road.
Dude, Whiplash Road.
Yeah.
I mean, that's applicable.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right, so me, I'm going with the good old the O'Neaters.
Oh, from that thing you do.
The Wonders. So they started
off, love that movie.
They started off as O-N-E-D-E-R-S, It was supposed to be Wonders, but everyone called them the Oneaters. And then they switched their name to actually the Wonders. But what I like about them is, so, you know, Spinal Tap, they become very sad. You know, like, they're just very sad, right? Like, I love them, but, you know, you can laugh with them, but they're out of their minds. And they kind of lose touch with their audience. But the Oneaters, or the Wonders, they have one massive hit that they'll live on the royalties for the rest of their lives, right? They have a great tour. They go all around the world. They appear in some movie. And then they break up, have a bunch of money, and then they go do their separate thing all happy. So it's like you get out of the music industry before all the bad stuff. So it's basically one-hit wonder, make a ton of money, you're out. You can sell garage doors.
They were like a shorter timeline version of the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, and like they make money. They're going to play that song forever. Like, they're going to make so many royalties. If that song was as popular as it was, like, they can live on that for the rest of their lives. So,
I am not an iTunes crazy person. I only have like 300 songs on my iTunes. That's it. Like 300. One of them is That Thing You Do.
Yeah. See? Like, and if this was in that fictional world, it was it hit number 41 on the charts here, but it hit number one there. They went all around the world. They're going to make royalties. They got out of the music industry before they were burnt out. You know, there's no like Stonehenge that's 13 inches high. You know, there's no nipple piercings. You know, like there's no Timothy Oliphant wearing a regular t-shirt. It's just four dudes go around the world, big hit, they're out.
Nice.
Boom. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to end up like, you're not going to choke on a sandwich.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to have to keep up with the times.
I'm going to tell you, though, their lead singer, Jonathan Shaish, he did not turn out well, because like in the 5 years after that, he's doing like sequels to The Lost Boys. He's doing Prom Night. He's doing every bad horror movie. One of those Tales from the Crypt movies he did. Like, he's doing every bad horror movie.
Yeah, but in the movie, he did great. He started a really popular band.
But in my head, it's his character who then turned to those movies.
Well, interesting.
Because he didn't want that. He wanted that spotlight all the time. He was pissed when the band was breaking up.
Yeah, Embry just went and joined the military. And, like, Giovanni Ribisi or something was just like, whatever. I love that movie. There was a longer cut, but Tom Hanks knocked it down lower to a shorter thing.
I love that movie. I've got, like, 1,000 horror movies. I do own That Thing You Do.
He did a Nerdist commentary where he got all defensive about the director's cut. He's like, I just cut everything out. But apparently he loves the director's cut more than the theatrical cut. Well, yeah, so that's me. I'd be in the Oneaters.
Okay. So the answer to that question is Oneaters.
Yep, Oneaters.
The Oneaters. All right.
Not the Wonders.
No.
All right, Laz, what's your random award?
All right, so getting back on the horse. My second random award? The mid-year 2016 random award. My second award is Best Mr. Ooze Impression. You guys didn't know Mr. Ooze was the villain from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie that came out in 1995.
Ivan Ooze.
Yeah. He was like this really kind of alien-looking, kind of purplish, pink-looking
dude. I already know what you're talking about. Yeah. I already know.
So this year's winner of the Best Mr. Ooze Impression is... what's his name?
Oscar Isaac
from Apocalypse. Yeah. He pulls off the Mr. Ooze impression very well. Right? Because when you think of Apocalypse, you think of like this hulking giant monster. And Oscar Isaac just went with the Mr. Ooze route.
Yep.
Right?
Just he puts his hand on a TV and goes, learning.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see it. Now I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
And he just gives Four Horsemen makeovers.
You just look at him. I'm just like, that's not Apocalypse.
Wait, so he put his hand on a TV, and then kind of like the Matrix was just absorbing the knowledge. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
But he said, learning.
Yes.
That sounds like Ludo, the big like horned ogre from Labyrinth. Sarah Friend.
Or Mongo from Blazing Saddles.
I'm so glad I didn't spend $8 to hear Oscar Isaac do an ogre voice.
And like, you know who wakens him up is Rose Byrne in the beginning. She opens up that corridor, then the light bounces down there.
And that wakes him up?
Yeah. It's like three dudes chanting, then you never hear them again.
And then he's like, awakening.
So I think we talked about this before. Like, Laz, what do you think about his four horsemen standing around in semicircles? Because this is one of my random awards.
Ugh. It was kind of a waste because they were actually they were really good characters with like a lot of backstory, and they didn't do anything with them.
Like, so. Olivia Munn said she like worked out for 7 years, and she just stands in one spot in this movie and glowers at people.
Yeah,
and she has one jump, and then the rest of her CGI.
What do you think she did to for that in preparation for that? Did she just go outside, stand in one spot, and just glower
for just like hours on angrily at things?
Yeah.
In a tight, everyone else is wearing normal uniforms, and she's like wearing this tight outfit.
She's just walking around like a vegan in a meat shop, sneering at everything.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, and at the very end, she glowers again. She does nothing in this movie, and she said she was dissing on Deadpool.
Hmm.
But yeah, I had best makeovers and standing around in a semicircle.
wait, what was that?
Best makeovers and standing around in a semicircle.
Who's the makeover for?
Well, the four horsemen, he basically gets them in like, they're like a Miata, and he turns them into Corvettes. Like, he puts his hand on them, and Storm gets a really sweet mohawk.
So she didn't have a mohawk before he...
Well, it wasn't as super. It wasn't as fancy.
Okay.
And then Angel has real wings, and he turns them into metal wings, and he puts weird tattoos on his face. Then Psylocke, he gives her that outfit and like some purple hair. Like, he gives them all makeovers.
Boy, I'm really glad I didn't spend $8 or $12 on this. Like, I'm gonna see it, right? When it's on HBO, I'm gonna see it day one that I can see it on HBO for not $8 or $12.
Yeah.
And a Saturday night. But man, that's rough. Can we not talk about this anymore? Like, this is, I mean, I feel relieved that I didn't see it, but I feel like I'm depressing us by talking about it. Is it my turn? Yep. Can I pull us out of this? All right, I want to do the absolute weirdest babysitting proposition ever, and it goes to The Boy.
Oh, gosh.
Now, in The Boy, the character Maggie, I can't think of her name offhand. Anyone? Maggie? The Walking Dead. But Maggie from The Walking Dead basically is the star of this movie. And
Laura Cohen.
Laura Cohen, right. Lovely, fine actress in my opinion. She flies from America to England to this like secluded little town, right? I don't know how she got this babysitting ad in the first
place. Yeah, because they don't even – do they have anything at that house?
It's huge. It's a huge house. Everything's in it. Pool tables, everything's in it. There's like 89 fridges, but like everything's there that she could need. But like, there are these rules. Now, but even before you get to the rules, with this proposition, she flew from America to probably London and then drove for hours to some secluded little spot. It was way out of town in the woods in this big house in this little town. And then she interviewed for the job. And when she interviewed for the job, they say, these old people, right? They're like, I don't know, 70. This is our son, Brom. And Brom is like a porcelain doll that's like 2.5 feet tall that looks like it's modeled after a 7-year-old. And they say, Brom is a very sweet boy. And they treat him like he's a regular kid, and they have a straight face. They're 100% straight-faced. Like, when they walk out of the room of the Brom doll, like, when the dad walks out, he's not like, okay, look, my wife is totally, like, nuts, right? But we have to play along with this. I'll pay you really well. No, he's straight-facing it, right? And so they have to follow the rules. She has to feed him. She can't leave him alone. She has to sing to him. He has lessons, like, classes, like he's being homeschooled. There are all these rules that need to be followed, and she's just like, this isn't weird and something right out of a horror movie. I'll take it.
No.
And by the way, at the end of the interview, they said it was up to Brom, the doll, whether or not she got the job. And then, like, she leaves the room for 30 seconds, and the mother comes out. She's like, Brom chose you. He likes you. I'm like, what is going on here?
In the words of Monty Python, run away.
Exactly, run away. Man. This is more evil than that rabbit with the big teeth.
Can I ask you something?
You can ask me anything about it. Now, I like this movie. I want to be very clear to our listeners. This movie is stupid, but it was stupid done very, very well. I was pleased with it.
Could she have just ran away?
Okay, here's the funny thing, all right? If she, because she was secluded, she was in a little secluded town. She didn't have a car. So if she called somebody and said, and it's me, right? I'm babysitting Brahm. I am. And I'm like, yo, Mark, like, I'm in this little hamlet outside of London. I need you to come pick me up and take me to the airport because something, you know, I just want to go home. And you'd be like, okay, bro, I'll be there in an hour. You'd get there. I'd be dead, right? I'd be dead. But if instead I was just thinking to myself, something's not right, and I just walked out the front door, everything would be fine. If I just walked, if I walked like the 5 miles over the course of 2 hours down a trail to the town and then got a cab or a bus, everything would have been fine. But if I said stuff out loud, dead.
What if you like called like 14 people over when Brahm wasn't around and then they helped you pack? Could you all leave or would he kill all 14 people?
You. I think that 14 people would show up to a house with one dead you, and then Brahm would pick them off.
Oof.
Because Brahm knows what's coming.
But if Brahm? You're just like, if you're like, then you just ran.
Like, yeah, if you just booked, like you're following the rules. Everything is in your head. In your head, you're just like, something's not right. I got to get out of here. I got to plan my escape. And you just like literally drop Brahm and run. It sounds like stop, drop, and roll, doesn't it? Drop Brahm and run. If you just drop Brahm and run, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Don't come back. Just keep running. You will be fine. It's weird. It's weird the way this movie works.
It takes a lot of horror out of the movie.
But you see, the movie worked. I maintain that this movie worked. And I walked in. Am I the only one who saw this, by the way, guys?
Yeah.
Laz, did you see this?
No, I didn't.
So you guys like saw the ad, and you probably both thought, like, this is going to royally suck, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that. I went in there like certain I wouldn't like it. Like I was almost grumpy, but I'm like, I have to see it. The production value looks too good. And I was pleased. I really liked it. Nice. But I mean, not since House of the Devil was there such a weird babysitting proposition.
I mean, I like the idea of it.
In House of the Devil?
No, of the boy. Like it's a kooky idea.
But like there's so many red flags. It's just so many like red
banners.
Like it's, you flew all the way out there to interview. You walked out of the room for 30 seconds and Brahm whispered to his mother that he wanted you. No. That was enough for me. Interview over. I'm out.
Brother.
Like it was bonkers. But so, House of the Devil was weird too.
So I got another movie here featuring a kid. But it's about a kid on the run with his parents. And this award is Best Jean Jacket.
Ooh.
What's this?
Let me show you a picture. Midnight Special. It's directed by Jeff Nichols. It's an Amblin film that J.J. Abrams wishes he could direct and burn. And it is a beautiful like movie where Michael Shannon is on the run with his son. Hey, that kind of rhymes. And throughout the film, he has this sweet jean jacket, which Kurt Russell would be proud of. I'm going to show you guys a picture right now. Here, I'll put it up to the camera.
Wait, hold on. I feel like I saw ads for this movie on certain, like, discussion group forums where it was, like, there's something fantastic
about it. Well, see, can you see the picture there?
I see Michael Shannon in a jean jacket.
Yeah.
Oh,
so basically, this boy has some superpowers, but he's in some cult. So his father, played by Michael Shannon, and his friend Joel Edgerton, you know, break him free of the place, and they go on the run. They pick up Kirsten Dunst, and they're being chased by Adam Driver, who's a very kind of nice doctor. But it's just a movie about a dad and mom protecting their son. And Michael Shannon is always good in it. He was also in Shotgun Stories, Take Shelter, and Mud. And it's just Jeff Nichols knows how to make these beautiful movies that don't tell you much. And it's you know, Amblin movies from the 80s with like kids and parents and on the run and supernatural stuff. This is one of those movies that doesn't feel like a ripoff of one of those movies. It's an original story. It didn't do well at the cinemas, but I think what sells it is Michael Shannon buttons his shirt all the way up, no tie, and wears a jean jacket. Crushes it.
So what are the powers of the kid? I'm actually really curious.
I don't want to tell you that.
You know, it's okay. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I told you a lot about the boy without ruining anything. That's fair. Like, we're not.
Yeah. I mean,
now I'm curious, though.
When you go to the website, you're going to look at Shannon and you'll be like, this guy's a leading man. He has good hair. He has a good jean jacket. His jean jacket game is strong.
Like, is this like a dramatized extended episode of Heroes?
No.
No?
No.
Interesting.
If Heroes, the best episode of Heroes season one, but better.
All of season one was great of Heroes.
Yeah, but it got so bad I forgot about this first season.
Season two and three and whatever.
Kind of like the Pirates of the Caribbean series. I love the first one. The second one was okay. The third one was all right. I hated the fourth one. So now I hate the whole series. But we just watched the Pirates first movie while we were cooking the other day. And now I love the series again because the first movie's so good.
The first movies are always good.
Yeah, but don't watch the other movie. Well, the third one's kind of okay. I mean, actually, just don't watch the other ones.
Yeah, just watch the first one. It's really good.
Yeah. It's great if you just pretend like the other ones don't exist.
Yeah, you're right. Because it's like Johnny Depp should have gotten an Oscar, I feel like.
Yeah.
What's your next award, Lazvat?
All right, this is actually my last random award because I only came up with three. But I felt like I saved the best for last. All right, so this one is best use of the name Martha as a plot device, right?
Dude.
So there's a... Oh, man. It was a pretty wide field for this award. But
did you say Martha? Did you say Martha? I don't even know why I'm angry at you anymore.
The winner...
Best friends forever.
The winner goes to Batman versus Superman. For those of you who haven't seen the movie, right, Batman and Superman are just going at it, as the title implies. And they're just like, man, they just really, really can't stand each other. And then there's like a pivotal moment where they find out that their mother's
Batman
name...
Batman is literally about to kill Superman.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's got the kryptonite and everything. And then Clark Kent just yells out, Martha. It's like... And Bruce Wayne's like, what? And they find out that their mothers are both named Martha, and they just... The whole relationship, the whole dynamic of the relationship just suddenly shifted from, like, total enemies to, like, total bros now. Like, oh, dude, I had no idea your mother's name was Martha, too. Mine was as well. We should go grab a drink. Like, what?
I hope in the director's cut they're running on the beach together, like on Rocky 3.
Yeah, with their really, really short shorts.
No. Yeah.
Like, but when Clark said Martha, like, the third time, right? Like, yeah. Martha. And, you know, he, like, squints at him. He's like, Martha. And Bruce Wayne's like, wait, what? Martha. Yeah, Martha? And then when he really connects, it took three times, right, for him to process this like he was a 1980s computer. Like, he then short-circuited like a robot monster in a 70s movie. It's like, Martha? It was like when Nick Nolte was having his alcoholic crying attack in Warrior. Martha? Martha? Malfunction. Like, he was falling apart. Yeah. Like, I don't understand. Like, it was the code word. It's almost like in Civil War where they're like, freight car, seven, peach, blue. And the Winter Warrior just goes nuts. Like,
you know, I'm pretty sure, like, the writers, like, they intended for that moment to be, like, a pivotal emotional turning point for the movie where, you know, they start to move past their differences. But it was just really obvious. Like, I mean, there's this term called Deus Ex Machina, that it's basically like a plot device that just, you know, solves like a bunch of problems. Like, the biggest problem in this movie up till then, like, how do we make these two friends? And like, they just came up with the someone realized, like, oh, well, both of their characters' mother's names are Martha. So I propose that we rename this award and also that trope from Deus Ex Machina to Deus Ex Martha.
Martha.
The Deus Ex Martha Award, right? That's what it is. It's just like a weird, like, plot device to make them friends. It's really weird. I don't know. I couldn't get over it. There were a lot of bad things about that movie, but that one stuck out like a sore thumb to me. Like, oh, really?
No, like, back in, like, what was it, about 2008, it was Deus Ex Velociraptor.
Oh, yeah.
Did we just become best friends?
Like, I've never done this before in a theater, but when that whole Martha scene happened, I almost, in the theater, just went, like, really loud. I just wanted to do that noise.
Yeah. You know how when Nick Nolte does his alcoholic spit stumble cry, and like you almost see this like thick mucusy like just cut, dripping out of his mouth, like the Queen alien and Aliens, like just oozing down onto her victim. Like I thought that I was gonna see that like ectoplasmic mucus ooze down onto Clark's face as he was Martha.
Oh gosh.
That was just, I really felt like I was watching someone like break down, have a nervous breakdown during an intervention when he heard Martha three times.
So what do you got? What's your next one, Lev?
Oh my God. The most unexpectedly melted protagonist award.
What?
And that goes to John Gallagher for 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh.
Oh.
when he's standing in front of brilliantly crazy, as we talked about in episode 51, John Goodman in 10 Cloverfield Lane about lying to him, and John Goodman just says with a straight face, "I forgive you," and shoots him in the head. And he's right there in front of the vat of acid, and he dumps him in the acid and melts him down.
Yeah, that caught me off guard. But you know what hurt me most about that movie, and this is one of my awards, is how she wasted scotch at the end of it. I don't care.
You mean throwing it at the alien?
She wasted it. She didn't even drink any of it.
You were enjoying the movie up to that point.
I hate the movie now because they introduce this great bottle of scotch. And you're like, oh, great. Oh, this is lovely. Like Chekhov's scotch, you know? She's going to drink it later. But then she just blows up an alien with it. And I'm like, well, this is bullshit. Like, what was this, Grabbers?
Yeah, they really went against the Chekhovian theme. Like, if there's a gun on the wall in Act 1, you're going to throw it into the sky at an alien in Act 3.
Like, she should have just drank all of it, and then the alien would have been like, this girl likes to party.
Or it would have tried to eat her and be like,
just barf and get her all gushy and gross, and you would love that, all the goo. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I love that goo.
The alien just shoves her in the mouth and then just goes, just like you see her flying like 50 yards and she lives, gets away from John Goodman. But I do say, John Gallagher.
You're just foghorn leghorning. I say.
He was good in that movie, Gallagher Jr. And I did not see that coming like that. And I think John Goodman, he won't be remembered come awards time, but he put in a great performance in that film is a really great villain. I just think they wasted scotch, and that's inexcusable. It's worse than that movie Torque, but it's not bad as Skyfall, where they wasted 50-year McAllen.
Oh yeah.
Or when they saved the, what was the liquor in the Kingsman?
Oh yeah, the Dalmore 62. They actually saved it between three people. That made me love the movie. Like, that's my favorite movie now, is because they didn't waste Dalmore 62. That vat, man. Jeez Louise. I like that. You guys watch 10 Cloverfield Lane. It's good.
It's good. Amazing.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to do one real quick one. Then I'm going to move down to one because these are two movies that people need to watch. So my first one is I'm amazed that the concert venue in Green Room actually had a Green Room award. It was a terrible club, but they had a Green Room in it, which I don't know. I find that interesting. Mm-hmm. But the one I'm going to do is a movie that everybody needs to watch. Right? Everybody needs to. It's called Everybody Wants Some. And the award is Best Movie, Mustaches, Dialogue, and Usage of Kurt Russell's Son Wyatt Award. So Everybody Wants Some is a spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused. It's about a bunch of baseball players 3 days before college starts. And you don't have to be a jock. I hear a lot of people going, oh, the jocks in this movie. It's not the way it is. It's very universal with their characters and how they learn. You can kind of watch these people and enjoy them. The theater I was in, you know, was sold out and people were laughing really loudly. So don't go like, I don't want to see a baseball player movie. Like, it's a movie about a bunch of weird dudes in college. It's relaxed. If you like Linkletter, if you like people walking, if you like Kurt Russell's son Wyatt smoking weed, if you like really great mustaches, if you like good dialogue, if you like good music, if you like keg stands, if you like games of knuckles, if you like tubing, if you like baseball, if you like duct tape, if you like ping pong, if you like people throwing ping pong paddles, if you like parties where people dress up as other people, you'll like that. If you like hazing parties, that'll be good. If you like pitching, catching, batting.
I actually hate all those things, but I'm going to watch the movie anyway. I'm going to watch the movie anyway.
Okay, good. Yes. Good. Do we have time for one more award?
Yeah, just one more.
All right, Levin, good. Take it.
All right, so I'm going to pull a hopscotch, too. So the one that I won't discuss, because we already kind of discussed it in episode 57, is the worst twin empathy award ever, and it would go to The Forest.
Oh, gosh.
But please listen to episode 57 if you want to hear how these twins were the worst twins ever.
I'm in the forest, and I'm just walking around the forest, and I'm scared in this forest, and there's suicides in the forest, and I'm looking for my sister, and I
just, you're doing the Japanese suicide forest diaries.
I openly mock Japanese people because of their food, and I eat chips instead, and I don't listen to people, and I go off the trail, and I'm with a guy named Aiden. Why is his name Aiden?
What
is this guy? Why am I walking? What?
Aiden's like, hot.
So they say don't go off the trail, but I'm going to go off the trail, and I'm going to hear.
I'm in the nature.
I'm going to hear a ghost voice, and I'm going to run really far towards it. And
let's
just follow these things, and I'm just going to walk around, and the editing's going to be really long, and it's going to hold on me, and. I wish there was a little porcelain boy that I had to follow rules from, and I just the woods, the forest.
The forest.
Ugh.
The Woods is a movie that's coming out that people are evidently stoked about.
Oh yeah, dumb dumb horror.
But so my actual award that I'm going with is the most eerily menacing King Louis ever award for The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
In the new The Jungle Book, they made King Louis, who was, you know, both appropriately, interestingly, and very well played by Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
But they made King Louis like 25 feet tall.
Yeah, he was a monster.
They made King Louis into like King Kong. And it was so weird to me that he was so big. And then it was like one of those TLC TV shows, like My 600-Pound Life or something, where they never stand up from their couch or something, because when King Louis got up, his like fur was all matted and tore off, and it was stuck to the stone under him, kind of like he had been sitting there pooping himself, and the fur was matted. Why else did the fur come off like that? Like there were some weird, gross things. And then when he's chasing him, instead of being fun like in the cartoon Jungle Book, which granted was more playful, right? King Louis is a regular-sized orangutan chasing a bear, right, and a panther and a boy.
A Bill Murray bear.
No, in the cartoon, I'm saying. Like, he's a regular-sized orangutan chasing a bear, but he has hundreds of monkeys, so it's kind of menacing. And this, he doesn't need his 1,000 monkeys to be menacing. He's like an 80,000-pound primate. Like, he's literally knocking down the ruins. Like, it was kind of terrifying.
Yeah, he was scary. I loved it.
Like I didn't. I thought it totally violated like the fun escapism. I don't know. Yeah, I like the Christopher Walken-ness, but I didn't like the gigantism that they gave it.
John Favreau was talking about that, and he said he just made him big because the boy was so small, and he kind of the creature seemed bigger to everyone when you're a child. So he kind of framed him in that way. That was his explanation for the bigness. Yeah.
Well, the creature looked gigantic next to a gigantic bear.
I'll tell you what, though. Anytime that Bill Murray's hanging around eating honey and Christopher Walken is a orangutan, I'm on board. And Johansson was Ra.
Yeah.
Ka.
Lupita Nyong'o was that wolf. Oh, and Idris Elba was the lion.
Right.
Man.
I mean the tiger, Shere Khan.
Yeah,
right?
The tiger. Yeah, yeah. And then Ricky Nelson was the sloth.
Who is the pangolin? I love the pangolin in
Wait, which one was that?
The pangolin, the little scaly.
Oh yeah. Thing.
And Bill Murray is like, you're going to be even more endangered or something, like if you don't get stop interrupting.
Yeah, they were watching him do the honey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I don't remember who that was, but yeah, cool. I love that Christopher Walken singing. Anytime he's singing.
Oh, I hated that.
This makes me happy. I love
it. Because he wasn't singing. He was talking in rhyme.
I love it. I just want to see that one music video, Weapon of Choice, where he's dancing, Fatboy Slim.
That was cool, yeah.
Was that really him dancing?
Oh, yeah.
Really? I thought that was like CGI. So.
Oh, no. I think that was... Was that before actual CGI? Like, he was just green screened, I think.
I refuse. I think the dancing and she's all that to Fatboy Slim was CGI.
Yeah. I don't know.
She's all that.
I apologize to any Walken fans who doubted for doubting his dancing ability.
I'd do a Walken, but it would probably just sound up like me trying to do Michael Caine.
These boots are made for walking.
Oh, gosh.
Christopher.
Need more cowbell. We needs more cowbell. Wait, we needs more? Oh, gosh, I got to stop. I'm sounding like Jar Jar meets Christopher Walken.
Well, at least it didn't sound like Michael Caine.
He needs more cowbell, Jar Jar.
All right, guys. I think that does it for our podcast. That was a pretty good rundown of random awards.
Oh, yeah.
For the mid-year point.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you want to read more, go to moviesfilmsandflicks.com and read the post.
Hey, that was a nice plug there.
Boom.
Blah, 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 blah. Also check out sharkdropper.com. Check out Lamb. Was it lamb.com?
Or the large ass movie blogs.com.
Okay. So it's not lamb.com.
No, it's large ass movie blogs.com. And I know it says large ass, but it's large association.
Just large ass. Just Google large ass. You'll probably find it.
Yeah. And look on images.
Yeah. don't blame us for anything that happens to you. If you Google large ass on a public computer, like in your university library or something, don't blame us. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
We did have a weird search term today.
Oh, please. Can we discuss it briefly?
It was Rene Russo's butt.
Rene Russo's butt?
But we have a lot of weird search terms, and I was at work, and when Mark pointed this out to me, I'm like, I really want to type in Rene Russo butt in a search engine and see what I get, but I'm on my federal computer at work, so I wouldn't do it.
But I've just always say it's been part of a research project.
I've always been very respectful of Rene Russo on the site, so I don't know where that comes from.
I don't think I've even mentioned Rene Russo on the site, not unless I was blogging in the mid-90s.
The only movies I can remember off the top of my head that she was in are the Lethal Weapon movies and the Thor movies.
Tin Cup.
What?
Tin Cup.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Dude, Free Jack.
And that movie, that good movie with Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, Thomas Crown Affair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, check out Rene Russo movies.
Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Check out movies with Rene Russo's butt in them, which is presumably all of them.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I've been your host, John Lossman. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Mark Hoffmeyer.
John Levengood.
Rene Russo booty.
We'll see you guys next time.
Target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.